Welcome to Menopause Rescue. I'm Dr. Polly Watson. Midlife women are often caught up in a sea of symptoms. Too often, they're overwhelmed by the lack of support from mainstream healthcare. They're inundated with so-called experts who are selling solutions which may lack credibility. I'm a Menopause Society certified gynecologist with both traditional and functional medicine training. I'm here to guide you through this transition and help you decipher the facts from the fads. Armed with credible information, I hope you are empowered to rescue and restore your health, making the second half of your life your best.
So we've talked a little bit about why weight gain tends to happen in midlife. And I'd like to take a minute to go through some common things I see again and again that women are doing that I feel like are really counterproductive. So probably the most common thing I see is that women are not eating enough protein. Maybe they are experimenting with an exclusively plant-based diet. Maybe they're not clear on how much protein they actually need. They might also just be kind of misinformed about how much protein is in, let's say, nut butter. And they feel like, well, if they put some nut butter on it and half of an apple, that's a sufficient amount of protein for a meal when it may actually be a third of what they need for that meal. So if you're willing to be a little bit nerdy, you can go online and we'll link this in the show notes to a metabolic rate calculator where you can determine based on how much exercise you're doing, how many calories you need, and then you can calculate 30% of your calories from protein. Just in case you don't know, a gram of protein has 4 calories. Let's just say 30% of your total caloric needs were 400 calories. You divide 400 by 4, and that's 100 grams of protein. If you're not going to get that specific, many people will use either 0.7 grams to 1 gram per pound of body weight. And that's a little bit heavy on protein. Typically, we would be making that recommendation for someone who is lifting heavy weights and actively trying to gain more lean muscle mass. But as we talked about earlier, as we're losing so much muscle mass in midlife, this is a time where we really want to focus on that. Another common mistake I see women eating is just not eating enough, particularly as fasting has gotten really popular. I'm seeing some women that have kind of gone down to one meal a day, and they're not maybe going in and out of fasting. They just kind of got adapted to eating one meal a day, and they have been doing this for a long time. And oftentimes they're really tired and depleted and may not quite have enough nutrition, particularly if they're trying to exercise. So I think fasting can have a lot of benefits, but I think that many people do well with short periods of fasting and times where they're allowing themselves to eat more. So we're encouraging metabolic flexibility. We're not trying to tell the body that we're just going to not eat for prolonged periods of time. Another really common barrier to midlife weight concerns is alcohol use. And I think we saw this a ton in the pandemic. And I think a lot of folks have really relied on alcohol as a crutch for stress management. Everybody's working hard. They're tired at the end of a long day, and that's their reward. Or what I hear a lot is, this is how my partner and I connect at the end of the day. Absolutely. I want you to connect with your partner. That is fantastic. I just think we might be able to find a way without alcohol. Maybe you go for a walk. Maybe you have intimacy time and you're sexy. That's great. Maybe you watch the birds. I don't know. But maybe we can connect without alcohol. So the connection is fantastic. But alcohol is a carcinogen. I think we kind of got into this whole myth that alcohol is good for the heart. Alcohol is responsible for 7 different kinds of cancer, and we can start to see cancer rates increase with as little as 1 drink a day. So I know I'm absolutely no fun, and I'm sorry, but I think particularly when people are having 2 or 3 glasses of wine a night, that's you know, up to 600 calories that is not really giving them anything nutritious or useful for their body. I would strongly encourage you to significantly limit alcohol if you have concerns about weight. Another common theme that I see when folks aren't hitting their weight loss goals is that they do the same thing for exercise all the time. So I really love it when someone comes in and they're lifting weights 2 to 3 times a week. They're doing some cardio 3 days a week. They're doing something for mobility every day. They're doing, maybe they throw in a hot yoga class and really get some kind of an active rest day. Rest days are super important. But when people like just go for a walk, now don't get me wrong, if you're not doing any movement, doing some movement rather than no movement is fantastic. Please go for your walk. But as the walk starts to get easier, maybe you could throw in the New York Times 7-minute workout and get some body weight exercise in there. We want to diversify our exercise, and we really want to start getting some weightlifting or at least body weight exercises in. I think the other barrier I know that I see a lot of women struggle with is with weight is the relationship with stress hormones and weight loss resistance. So when our cortisol is high, our stress hormones are high, we're going to become more insulin resistant. We're going to kind of get that SpongeBob SquarePants look, the belly fat look. And we all need to have active stress management. What do I mean by that? We know that stress management is much more helpful if we have little breaks through the day. If that's a breathing exercise, if it's tapping, if it's a 5-minute meditation, if it's walking outside of our office and looking at the birds for 5 minutes, little tiny breaks through the day are far more helpful for our nervous systems than, let's say, going to yoga one day a week. Yoga is great. Don't get me wrong. We just don't want to say that's our only stress management for the whole week. We want to really be introducing little breaks through the day. And we can link to some great breathing exercises in the show notes as a resource for you. We talked a little bit about sleep already, but I think we're all kind of in this very busy culture, and so much of the time sleep is deprioritized. You're not going to lose weight if your body feels like you're constantly running away from a tiger. And one way that we are in that sympathetic dominant state is we don't get enough restorative sleep. So many women are having sleep disruption because of hot flashes and night sweats, maybe their partner snores, but many other women are just simply not allowing enough time for sleep. So I would definitely control what you can control. Prioritize excellent sleep hygiene. You're sleeping in a completely dark room. You're turning off blue light 2 hours before you go to bed. You're not eating within 3 hours of going to bed. You're trying to have a regular sleep schedule when you get up at the same time and you go to the bed at the same time every day. And then lastly, I think another place where I see women really get sabotaged is they're kind of in this mindset where they're continuing to put themselves last in their families. And I'm a mom. I get when the kids won't eat whatever, and you don't want to be a short order cook, and you don't want to make 3 different dinners. As I have 2 teenage boys, one of whom is very, very active. And so he's going to need a lot more carbohydrates than I do. And I'm not going to need nearly as many carbohydrates as a 50-year-old perimenopausal woman. And so I don't make 2 separate dinners. Maybe I'll have a really big salad. And for instance, we make a lot of stir fry. We make a lot of curry. We make a lot of tacos. And the protein, let's say we'll use the taco example, we'll have a big kind of shredded cabbage salad with cilantro and lime juice, and it'll be delicious. And that'll be my base. And I'll make a taco bowl with salad on the bottom, and have chicken and pico and guacamole. And that'll be my dinner, mostly kind of protein, vegetables, and fat. And then the boys might put beans, a corn tortilla. They might even have rice if they were really active that day. So I don't have to make two separate dinners. I'm just kind of flexing the amount of greens that I put on mine. And they might have a side salad, but their entire base of their plate isn't vegetables. So I think that we can get creative. We don't have to make two separate meals, but I think it's really important not to consistently put ourselves last, that we can adapt meals so that we can have our families get what they need while we can also get what we need. Okay. So part two, when we're bombarded with all of these health strategies for midlife weight loss, how do you determine what's right for you? How do you personalize that? How do you interpret all of these ideas? So before we dive into this, I want to clarify two ideas that are promoted in the health space that are just wrong. So the first idea is sort of calories in equals calories out, the sort of idea that weight loss is simply eating less than you take in. That doesn't work for me. It doesn't work for the women I am working with. I wish it were that simple. It's not. So energy in, energy out is sort of touted as being scientifically rigorous, as it's the first law of thermodynamics. Well, the first law of thermodynamics is true in a closed system, and your body isn't a closed system. So as you continue to restrict calories, your metabolism will start to get slower and slower because your body is saying, hey, she's not going to feed me. I've got to expend less resting energy. And your metabolism will just keep getting slower and slower. So I've seen plenty women end up being depleted and exhausted by constant restriction. To make matters worse, as they continue to restrict and restrict, they're often not losing just fat mass, but they're also losing lean muscle mass because they're eating so much less, they're not eating enough protein, they're too tired to exercise. So if they do lose weight, they end up being less metabolically healthy than when they started because they've lost lean muscle. So your body is smart. As you continue to restrict calories, your body will adapt to use less fuel. So calories in, calories out isn't good science. It's not true. And eventually it can often lead to you gaining more weight back because you're less metabolically healthy when you started. The second concept that is frustrating to me is that if you're eating a certain amount of macros, the food you eat doesn't matter. So in this kind of paradigm, someone could say, well, a French fry is a carbohydrate. As long as you're staying within a certain percentage of carbohydrate, it doesn't matter what you chose for that carbohydrate. Functional medicine often thinks about food as medicine, food as information for the body, right? So we know that the French fry doesn't provide a whole lot of nutrients. There's no fiber in it, and it often contains inflammatory fats. If we eat the same amount of carbohydrates, let's say in a pinto bean, we're getting fiber, a little bit of protein, some iron, and magnesium. So yes, they're both carbohydrates, but the beans have more nutrients. They're less inflammatory than the French fry. So I don't think all macros are the same. I think food quality absolutely matters. Okay, so now that we've gotten those kind of two maybe misconceptions out of the way, what are the things you can use when you're trying to assess if a certain weight loss strategy is right for you? And the main concept I want you to get here is you're balancing stressors with stress. What do I mean by that? So all of the things we recommend to women to lose weight are often increasing cortisol. So those things are lowering carbohydrates, or maybe even lowering carbohydrates so much that we get into a state of ketosis. Another way to promote insulin sensitivity is fasting or timed eating, high intensity interval exercise, and weightlifting. Stressors like hot or cold environments, like a sauna or a cold plunge. All of these things are hormetic stressors. They raise stress hormone or cortisol a little bit. And in an adaptive state, if everything's working the way it's supposed to, we're able to rise to the challenge, and those small stressors actually make us stronger. But if we're already maxed out and we're adding more and more stress to the system, then these stressors can actually be counterproductive. So trying to kind of figure out where you are with this can be challenging, but there's some simple things you can do to learn to listen to your body and see if it's the right time to push harder or to pull back. So oftentimes people will come in, and when they come in my office, they're like all in. They're so ready to get started with their health journey. And so they may come in and they say, I want to have a ketotic diet. I want to push this thing really hard. They often start off with something really extreme. And as a guide to try to help them make the best choices they can, I'm often asking questions about sort of what's going on in their life. Is this the right moment to push hard? And so, you know, if someone comes in and she's transitioning her mom into memory care while she's also going through a divorce, she has enough stressors and enough cortisol in her body already. We may need to back way off of that ketosis goal and try to eat a nutrient-dense diet and maybe focus on lowering and having really high quality carbs. But she may do much better on a lower carb, higher fat, moderate protein diet that she can do and not have to prick her finger all the time and not have to pee on a stick all the time. And that may serve her so much better based on where she's at that moment. So one of the main contributors to midlife weight gain is insulin resistance. So it makes sense that most of the popular recommendations are targeting metabolic health, right? Carb restriction, putting on lean muscle mass, adequate protein, timed eating, all of these things are promoting insulin sensitivity. But I think, again, we need to really personalize this approach. So if someone's recommending, for instance, a keto diet, and you have gallbladder disease, all that fat, you might not be able to digest well. If you're significantly restricting carbs while you're under a lot of stress, or you simply don't manage stress well, then that may actually be counterproductive. If you're doing endurance exercising, where you're training for hours and hours on end, you may need some carbs to fuel your workout. So how do you determine if something is too much? So I think the first kind of check-in would be sort of what's going on with you right now. If you're in the middle of a major life transition or you're really struggling, I think your first step might be to get some mental health support and to focus on sleep and eating vegetables, right? Just add more vegetables to whatever you're eating. Maybe you start walking. You're not doing anything super taxing. You're in this restoration phase. I don't think we talk enough about allowing for rest, allowing for doing less. We're in a culture that really prizes pushing harder. And sometimes that can be counterproductive. I think another thing to bring up in this conversation is that many folks have a history of disordered eating or compulsive behavior. So if someone's recommending to you that you're going to be on a low carb diet and you're going to need to track all of your macros, or we use a lot of continuous glucose monitors in our practice, if we're constantly asking you to check your blood sugar, that may be triggering for someone with a history of compulsive behavior, and that might not make sense for them. So I think it's really important to stand up for yourself and to honor wherever you're at. And if measuring carbs is helpful for one person, but is really triggering and counterproductive for you, that you give yourself permission not to do that. Let's say things are really stable for you and you're up for a challenge. I think it's really helpful to know what to look for to see if you're pushing yourself too hard in a way that's counterproductive. And so I think there's some simple things we can look for that can help give us clues if we're being a little too intense and we're pushing too hard. So the first one's really basic. I would say, what's going on with your sleep? Are you sleeping through the night? Do you wake up feeling refreshed? If, again, a lot of times when we start restricting carbs, when we start doing a lot more fasting, sometimes sleep gets disrupted. So if you're really struggling with sleep after starting a new health-promoting behavior, I would argue that sleep is probably one of the most important things we can do for our health. So that would be a sign to me that if it didn't resolve in a few nights, I might need to change something up. Another tool that can be helpful if you're into technology and you're into tracking things is looking at your heart rate variability. So heart rate variability has a warm place in my heart because it takes me back to the days of labor and delivery when I used to deliver babies. And maybe if you've had a pregnancy and you had monitoring during your pregnancy, you remember those big belts we put around your belly and we measured the baby's heart rate. And what we were looking for is resiliency in the baby. So high variability, the more wiggly that little line was of the baby's heart rate, showed that the baby was doing great and was tolerating labor and everything was good. And if the baby's heart rate started getting really flat, that was a sign that the baby was getting stressed and was maybe having a harder time and we needed to change something. So we still, as adults, have heart rate variability. And it's a measure of well-being and resiliency. So there are things like the Oura Ring that can track heart rate variability. Your Apple Watch can track heart rate variability. There's a company called HeartMath that has a little ear clip that can measure heart rate variability. And all of these companies have strategies to help you improve heart rate variability. If it's a visualization or a breathing strategy, et cetera, there are a lot of things that you can do to improve that. But if you like technology and you like measuring these things, it might be helpful to kind of check in, measure before you do an intervention, like a carb-restricted diet or a higher intensity exercise program, and see what's happening to your resilience. See what's happening to your overall heart rate variability. If it's starting to crash, that might be a sign you need to back off. Simply checking in with yourself, how do you feel after exercise, can be a great low-tech way to kind of see if what you're doing is too much or not. So exercise should always leave us feeling better than when we started. I may be tired after a workout because I worked out hard, but I feel kind of washed out. I might have that kind of runner's high. I'm always in a better mood. My perceived stress is usually better. I feel better after I exercise. If after you exercise, you immediately need to take a nap, that might be a sign that you're not fueling that workout well enough, or you needed more rest days, but it just may be too much. You shouldn't feel zapped after a workout. Another kind of subjective but non-tech way to sort of check in with yourself might be, you know, how's your overall energy? How's your mental focus? How are you able to accomplish your task at work? So if you're overtraining or overfasting, you may feel really tired, depleted. You may feel kind of brain fog. You may feel really sluggish, particularly if you're not eating enough. So I would really listen to yourself. If you're into the tech, you can kind of see that we like the tech a little bit, and you have access to a continuous glucose monitor. So you can usually get these through a prescription. We use them a lot in our practice, but it can be a great way to determine if whatever you're doing for weight loss is working for you. One of the things we see as a trend in people who are doing maybe too much fasting is that on the continuous glucose monitor, their fasting glucose will start to raise in the morning. and they haven't eaten anything yet. And if they've been fasting for a while, they've really tapped out all of their glucose reserves in their liver. Their glycogen's been kind of used up. And so typically what's going on there, they haven't eaten to make it go up. They're not exercising first thing in the morning to make it go up. They've used up most of their glycogen reserves. It's cortisol. Cortisol is causing insulin resistance. The glucose can't get in the cell. The blood levels are going up. And so if you have a continuous glucose monitor and you've been doing a lot of fasting and your fasting glucose is going up, that may be a sign that you're pushing too hard and we might need to actually do some refeeding. The last tech that I'll measure that I'm kind of experimenting with right now is the Lumen device. This is a little device you breathe into and it measures carbon dioxide when you exhale. And if you're burning carbohydrates for fuel, you'll blow off more CO2. And if you're burning mostly fat, you'll burn off less. So again, if you're starting to stress your body out too much, maybe you're restricting carbohydrates too much, and your body is feeling stressed by that, it's going to start holding on to all your energy and not letting you lose weight because your body doesn't feel safe, then you'll start to blow off more CO2, indicating that you're burning carbs even when you haven't eaten any carbs. So that can be really helpful, particularly for people who are really trying to find that sweet spot of lower carb versus no carb. And if lower carb is causing them more stress, they can actually manage that and correct. So before you start the next health trend for weight loss, I hope that you consider some of these tools to see if whatever's being recommended is right for you at this moment. I hope you give yourself permission to listen to your body and honor where you are right now. There are lots of reasons why we struggle with weight at midlife, and all of us have a different story, and all of us are managing different issues with our families, with caring for aging parents, with our jobs. So, you know, they say in yoga, keep your eyes on your own mat, but I would kind of encourage you to keep your eyes on your own mat here and really give yourself permission to find the solution that works for you and give yourself permission not to keep beating your head against the wall and really pushing harder and harder and harder with something that may not be working. Maybe the solution is to do less. Thanks so much for listening.
Thanks for listening to Menopause Rescue. If you're looking for a menopause expert and live in North Carolina, take our free online class and see if we're a match for your needs. It's called Are We a Good Fit? And is a quick and easy way to learn more about our practice and what it has to offer.
Hey, this is Dr. Watson. This is just a friendly reminder that this podcast is for general information purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. And any information you get from this podcast is considered educational only. You should make medical decisions with your healthcare provider. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice. Listeners should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition, and they should seek assistance from their healthcare professionals.